Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Finding Annie. I am reporting from a hotel room in Manchester on a rainy Saturday night. Just got a little quiet moment before the chaos ensues. Last week's episode got an enormous reaction. It was a chat with Zane Lowe. All the radio heads came out and kind of commented on it. And a lot of people who are just fans of listening to the shows over the years came out and kind of enjoyed the trip down memory lane. And a lot of people said they were inspired by it as well, which I was really happy about because I felt really inspired too. And my husband said the same thing. It kind of makes you look at your life where you are and figure out what you want to do. And kind of hopefully it helped you assess where you are and maybe kind of helped you be inspired to do something about your career if you're not in a place that you are fully happy with. So yeah, thank you to everyone for getting in touch. Shout out to Wendy Rollins, who said, "What an inspiring, enlightening and comical listen. I'm a fan of you both, and the opportunity to catch you both unfiltered was a treat. I have been in radio for 25 years and I had such a fantastic time laughing and nodding in agreement with the conversation. And I found myself inspired too, to hear that you both struggle with boredom at times and constantly feel a pull to make it happen made me feel a bit brighter about my next venture." So thank you for that, Wendy. And also shout out to LA Brennan. "Sat in my room as a teenager in my junior cert year doing homework in Donegal, I managed to just about get signal for BBC Radio 1 being so close to the border. Zane introduced me to the likes of Laura Marling and Arctic Monkeys and massively opened the door to my enjoyment and exploration of music as a teenager living in a rural place with terrible dial-up internet connection. That FM radio signal was a blessing." Radio is a solace, man. It's a solace, it's a friend, it's a companion, it's an escape, it's a path of discovery. It's all those things. And it was such a pleasure to go deep and really dig into why I love radio so much last week with someone who I've respected for so long. So yeah, thank you so much for listening to that. Onwards, soldiers, to this week's episode. And I am bringing you this week one of my favourite conversations that I've had for this project so far. Suzanne Moore is the guest on the podcast. She is an award-winning journalist. She is a mother of three daughters, a grandmother to one, with another on the way. She is born and bred in Hackney, East London, and has been writing for various publications all her adult life, but most recently has become best known for her pieces in The Guardian and in The New Statesman. Now, I was not put onto her, I just found her. I came across her and was drawn to her writing immediately because of its total lack of pretension and fearlessness in laying out her opinions in a totally honest and unambiguous way. As I said last week, when I was introducing this week's, Suzanne Moore does not skirt around the edges of things. She confronts them. She puts her face right up to them and challenges them. This year, she won the Orwell Prize for Journalism for writing that is, I quote, "incisive, relevant and human," and talks about her stubborn and brave commentary. She's written about mental health, about Brexit, about the Me Too movement, about the menopause, most recently about grief after the very sad death of her very close friend, Deborah Orr, the esteemed journalist. And also recently, a couple of months ago, in fact, she wrote an article called "Why Does No One Ever Tell You How Brilliant Aging Can Be?" This article, I sent the link to all my friends. I took quotes from it. I just found it so inspiring, so refreshing in terms of its outlook on age. And I wanted to read you a little bit of it now, if that's okay. "If you want Carol Vorderman's arse and Lana Del Rey's lips and Kim Kardashian's waist, I cannot help you. If you think a knee lift will change your life, well, good luck. If you think you can stay forever young, I have some breaking news. But no one talks about the good bits of aging, so I will. The menopause, a time of anxiety and then freedom when women move from being someone who can reproduce to someone who can't. Everything changes physically and mentally. It is a premonition of death, and one becomes a different kind of being altogether, a creature who can only reproduce itself. She goes on to talk about the editing process that comes with aging and how brilliant that is. And then there's the final two lines of the piece. Time is for wasting. Time is what you make of it. You choose. The best sign of aging, though, is that you are still you, only more so. So yeah, as I said, it really moved me. And I had been looking to speak to someone about growing older and all the psychological roller coasters that come with that. And I realised after I read the article that Suzanne Moore was the perfect person to speak to. So I got in touch and she invited us round her house and we sat in her beautiful kitchen and we talked. Enter the podcast, Suzanne Moore. We are here sitting in your kitchen. Thank you for having me in your lovely kitchen. And the reason why we're here is because you wrote an article about growing older about a month ago now, which proper struck me. I mean, I love your writing anyway. I always go to your articles and kind of treasure them and send them to my friends and like clip out quotes and stuff. But this one was just really resonated with me because I turned 40 last year and I've been really thinking about like age and time flying away. You just said that that article had a lot of reaction.
It did, actually. And it was just one of those things. I mean, I've written before about the menopause. I mean, I'm past that now. But I sometimes write the things I want to read, if you understand me. And I had read so many kind of depressing articles about aging and the kind of assumption that, especially for women, it's just dreadful, basically. You become invisible and miserable and unattractive and sort of all life is finished. And I just don't feel like that. And I know many women my age, I'm 61 now. I mean, I know many women my age who actually feel much happier in themselves. And I just wanted to talk about that as well. Because there's something, of course, you know, I'm very well aware that aging is really difficult for people with chronic illnesses. And I've got a friend now, he's extremely ill. I know it's not easy. I mean, I'm not sort of pretending it's all lovely. But there is something to do with kind of coming through the other side of your 50s and your 40s and your 50s. And you can still, you know, it's, I really hope things are changing so that we don't have to just kind of disappear. And there's something about the freedom that comes when your children get older, if you've had children. If you haven't had children, you know, you might still want to go and do something else. There's lots of stuff.
What do you think are the kind of perceptions of aging at the moment that you, you know, you mentioned in the article that kind of do your head in as someone who is over 60? Like, what do you resent about people's like perceptions of what it is to be old or older and growing older? But the word aging.
I mean, I think we don't need to be constantly reminded that, you know, our bodies are falling apart because we're women.
We know.
We're women. And we've grown up with our bodies constantly changing anyway, from puberty, going through the periods. If you've been pregnant, you're kind of aware that your body does really weird stuff.
Yeah.
And I mean, even when I think about breastfeeding and stuff now and I look back and think, God, that was so weird. You know, that one minute you have a baby and the next minute you're just like a machine and milk comes. And I remember being so shocked by it all at the time. Yeah. And then you get to a certain age and the periods stop and you feel quite mental, well, if you mean, and you feel hot. And
I really need to ask you about all of that.
Yeah. And I was very aware at that time and when that happened that I'd actually kind of consider myself fairly well informed, but when the menopause started happening, when I go to the doctors and say I feel very anxious, I can't sleep properly, all of these things, but I knew far less about what they call perimenopause and menopause than puberty. No, because we don't know anything. Because it's, this is to get back to the aging, we don't talk about it because it's slightly shameful, because it means that you might be about 50. I mean, the average age of menopause here in this country is 51. So you might be having some symptoms in your late 40s. But people don't like to talk about it because it's like saying, I'm getting older. And so women do tend to kind of slightly suffer in silence or talk to each other or go online. And then you find, I mean, God, you know, it's like Googling anything medical online. I mean, you know, I don't want to depress you, but it's like your clitoris is going to sort of drop off and all sorts of things. You're just going to dry out, basically. Oh, your life is going to be over. And it's awful. And you just get really even more worried, you know. And then you go to doctors, and there are brilliant doctors, but a lot of middle-aged women are being prescribed antidepressants, which they shouldn't be having for symptoms of the menopause. So I felt very strongly about that. So I wrote about that. And then I came out the other side of that. You know, there certainly is light at the end of the tunnel, because you've got to an age where your job in life, if you want to talk about biological destiny, which I wouldn't, but, you know, you've done your procreation bit, you've had your kids, or you haven't, but that bit of you is gone, and now you've got another life. And so that's what I think I wanted to celebrate. The other life, there's a freedom in it. There's a freedom in saying, well, I am this age, and look at me, this is brilliant. I've lived this long, and it's kind of great. Or you can say, oh, you know, my skin isn't like it was when I was 20, and the Daily Mail says I shouldn't have a knee lift, and, you know, the continual kind of reflection on how you look.
That was what resonated with me a lot in the article. Was the word aging, when you look it up, is all based on cosmetics and aesthetics.
Yeah, I think if you Google it, you'll just come up with a load of anti-aging moisturizers.
Like, it's something to combat rather than embrace.
It's
like a default negative thing, isn't it? That in the people's perception of it.
Yeah. I mean, the two things that you say to women that are, I mean, you can say them to men as well, but that seem to be the biggest compliments are, A, you lost weight, or B, you don't look your age. Mm. And you know, I haven't lost weight and I do look my age, and it's okay. Yeah. It's what I kind of wanted to say. I mean, I would like to shed a few pounds, but I'm not going to give up the things that make me enjoy my life.
Did you get a big reaction and response from women from this article?
Yeah, I did, because
I've never read anything like that.
I did, because just simply saying, I mean, I think I said at the end, you know, you're you, only you're more you.
Yeah, I love that line.
Yeah. So I got loads of people saying, oh, thank God someone has said this. It's almost, I'm okay being me. I never did look like a supermodel when I'm young, so I'm not going to look like one now.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got three daughters, so you watch young women and it's really difficult, because you know at the time they look beautiful and gorgeous, and they've got lovely skin and their bodies are perfect, and they don't feel very good often at the time they look the best. And it's a sad thing that our culture does that and makes us all compare ourselves to impossible people. And I do think that's got worse. When I was young, we'd look at film stars or pop stars or, you know, whoever, and you think, oh, my God, they're so beautiful and they're wonderful. But I didn't think I had to be them. I just thought they were, like, incredible people. Now it seems that younger women compare themselves the entire time to celebrities whose whole job, their entire job, is to be beautiful. And, yeah, we all love beautiful people. I mean, no question. But your self-worth, if that, you know, to use, self-esteem is an overused word, but you have to understand that self-esteem comes from lots of different sources. I mean, it comes from how you look is one, but it comes from the work you do, it comes from your friends, it comes from your relationships, it comes from how you feel about the world. And I as you age, I mean, if all your self-esteem has been put in that one box of how you look, it's going to be really difficult for you. Just thinking what you might what you might achieve or what you might want to do, it shouldn't fill us with dread.
Mm.
I think there's a perception, and again, there's a that people think that your life kind of stops because yes. you retire, and then what do? You just kind of wait to die. But to me, it's like I've seen my parents now, and they're like happier than ever, and they're traveling, and they're doing all the stuff that they've always wanted to do. And it's like you are freer than you've ever been in your life, right? Like, as long as your body is allowing you to do that, and you have the income to go on these adventures.
So, because what happens once you get, I don't even know if it's 60 or 55, you suddenly start getting these kind of saga holiday brochures. And also everybody, as I pointed out to them, everybody has sort of got white hair and a nice blue jumper and they're playing golf in Surrey or something. They're just doing things that you've never done. So like, why you think you're going to suddenly start doing them or going on cruises? I don't want to go on a cruise. I mean, this sort of assumptions about what they think older people are and do are from the 50s somehow.
Yeah.
You've just got these nice sort of tinkly grey-haired people and maybe a barbecue. That would be the most kind of exotic thing you ever did. And I just don't know anyone like that. Yeah. I just, you know, I'm not being like, oh, hey, I'm so cool. People just aren't like that now. And so their model of what to sell to older people. And actually the reality when I was there and I was sort of chatting to them is that group of people have way more disposable income sometimes than younger people.
Absolutely.
So don't patronise them.
Yeah.
Really. Yeah. I mean, don't patronise us. I mean, you know how Facebook picks up stuff. I just get ads for basically think machines that I can put on my face to make my skin better. And those kind of dresses I would call kind of, well, burkas, really. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Sort of kind of massive, huge sort of hemp sort of type tents.
Has anything surprised you since you've reached your...
My huge...
About how you feel or about how other people feel about you being the age that you are. Talking like you're an old person, which you are not.
What does make me feel older has changed me is having a grandchild. Because I don't know how to behave. Or when I tell people I've got a grandchild, I think they think that I should be kind of rushing around with this baby. Whereas I'm working and... Of course, I'm really happy for my daughter, and he's gorgeous. But I still have my life, and she has hers. They had to move in with me when she was pregnant, so you know that was a nice time. That was a really nice time. But that it's I think that's a hard word for me, grandma, because grandma to me is like
it's a label, isn't
it? Is somebody a little old lady with white hair? And like I've got that image. And then I think don't be so silly. You know, of course it isn't. I've got a second one coming. My second daughter's pregnant, so it's all happening.
Yeah.
And then
do they have you told your daughters that? Because my mum couldn't be called grandmum. Her name's Rosie, so she just put a G in front of it. She's called Rosie by her grandchildren.
That's great.
So it's kind of she just was like, I'm not ready. To be labelled a grandmother.
No, I'm exactly the same. And my daughter keeps saying, Mom, you've got to come up with a word. And I'm sort of can't quite do it. And I said, well, won't he come up with a word?
Yeah, that's nice. Just letting him come up with it.
Yeah, and the other grandparents, her boyfriend's parents, they've already got other grandchildren and they've got it sorted because he's just called Dad.
Just two dads.
No, the granddad is just called Dad.
Yeah.
So we've got Dad, and then Dad is the granddad.
That's perfect.
It's called Dad. So Mum,
and
Dad. Yeah. So I kind of, but I keep looking at different languages and different words and Dutch and Greek and Italian. And then I think, oh God, that's a bit pretentious. Things I'm not.
I love it. Going for the other language.
Going for another language and they call you, you know, nonno or
something.
Well, I'm not actually Italian. Why will I sort of suddenly become Italian? But just as I can't handle the word grandma, I think I can handle Nana because that's what I call mine.
Yeah.
Nan still seems a bit.
Nan does.
Nan's a bit.
It feels like
Nan's a bit. I'll get the hair net on, isn't it?
It's so, a blue rinse.
Yeah.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Talking about time and the passing of time, I have felt, especially in the last few years, that time is like sprinting away from me at great speed. And I kind of have this constant feeling of chasing it and trying to keep up with it and walk beside it in, you know, at the same pace. And it's just not happening. Do you find that it carries on like that? Because I felt like as I've got older, time has gone faster.
Yeah, I think I do, definitely. And I have a kind of argument with a really, really close friend of mine, because she is somebody who is incredibly active and goes to loads of things and every night goes to a show or see a film or whatever. And sometimes I say to her, you know, oh, I can't be bothered. I don't need to rush around like that. And she goes, let's not waste time. And we have a, you know, the kind of sort of banter that you have with somebody that you love.
Yeah.
And I say, no, sometimes it's really good to waste time. And it's that's kind of different. We have a different approach, because she's like, no, you've got to get, you know,
live it, you can.
Live every day. And I'm sometimes living every day is hanging out, not doing so much.
Yeah.
And that's something that I feel like I've learned in the last couple of years. That you don't always have to be kind of
rushing
or improving yourself.
That's
self-improvement,
isn't it? The idea of ambition. There's a Jeremy Irons quote about how he was so happy that he didn't have to chase this kind of raging ambition that he had all his life. It's the kind of idea of being happy with your lot. Is that?
I think it's, I mean, it can sound so cliche, sort of just being at peace with and all of that kind of thing. And I think people do it in different ways.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people want to go and meditate, but some people just want to go for a walk in the park, and it's the equivalent, and it doesn't matter, and they want to get a dog and do that. And I think it doesn't matter what that thing is.
It's more just knowing yourself and knowing what makes you happy, whatever way you want to approach.
Well, that's really key to what I would say to anyone. And I think that's what you learn as you get older, is that things that people have told you will make you happy may not. And they may not have done, and that's not your fault. That you just need to find the things that do and kind of recognize them. Because, you know, we're all told if you have this relationship, if you get that consumer good, whatever it is, if you get this high in your career, you will be happy. And life isn't like that.
Mm.
And we've all met those people, haven't we? And you kind of know it when you see it. I'm not like it, because I'm very restless. I think that's kind of part of being a journalist. You're kind of restless.
Mm.
But you meet people and they are literally planting a few bulbs, thinking about what they're going to look like in spring. And you think, oh, do you know what? You've got something going on there, which is really great. I mean, I've just come back from Greece, and it's, again, it might sound like a cliche, but sitting around in these tavernas where people eat really late and sit up all night. And we tried to get a taxi one day, and we were in a tiny village, and they said, well, he's asleep, so, you know, you won't be getting a taxi. That's it. But you kind of, I did very much have the feeling that these people have got their priorities sorted. They're going to have a nice meal. Of course, they were laughing at us because we're English, and they were going, Grexit, ha, ha, ha. Have another ouzo. But that sense of knowing that, you know, yes, you could rush around and see the latest exhibition, have the greatest meal in this five-star restaurant, or you can sit in a local place and slowly with people,
yeah,
was, yeah, a reminder of what matters. And of course I did that thing where I, because the news is so insane at the moment, it's very hard for all of us to switch off.
Especially with social media and the way that you consume the news, it's just constant, isn't it? You have to make an absolute, like, concerted effort to switch off. It's not just turning the telly off. It's not deleting Twitter off your phone, which is what I started doing at the weekends to stay sane.
Yeah. I'm kind of really torn on those things, especially because I know, like, my friends' parents who still can't use or won't use a cash machine. You know, we've now got these people who are completely locked out of all situations because they just won't go near the internet. And then, because I think it can be really useful for people who are isolated.
Absolutely.
Quite a few people I know who aren't pretty ill and quite stuck at home. Facebook, for all its, you know, all its ills, and I'm really aware of them, but it's their way of communicating and having a kind of community.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's one of the things that we do fear as we get older is loneliness and building in kind of networks of people. And it, and that's a really hard thing to talk about, I think, as well. Because obviously lots of people feel that they want to be in a family or in a kind of different living situation to the one they're in. I mean, I've often talked with friends about, you know, the fantasy of just buying a great big place.
And living with your friends.
And that it is a fantasy. And sometimes you do read pieces or there's a group of women in North London who did it. I think in Enfield, they built a place.
Wow.
Yeah. I think they managed to get some sort of help doing it. There's a group of women in France who all live together. And I mean, surely that's going to be the way. To me, to me, the isolated nuclear family is already, has already shown itself to not really be fit for purpose, and we live in different ways. And it would be the fear of getting older and being alone could be helped if we thought there were, you know, we could live with sort of like-minded people.
It's such a genius idea. I don't know how.
I think it's because I mean, I talk about it with my friends, and what we want is, we want our own space, but maybe a communal kitchen, and we want spare rooms for our kids to come and stay, and we want to have our we want our own space, but have other people there. That's kind of what we all want, isn't it? Because why are we all like killing ourselves to pay mortgages on our individual properties? You know, it's all kind of, I mean, I never thought I'd want to live in a commune.
I love it.
But I think I might.
I love the idea of moving into a commune when you're like 75.
Yeah. But because you see, that's a choice. Whereas old people's homes, where people feel dumped and uncared for and unloved and put with people who they wouldn't socially have anything in common with, it's sort of disrespecting the person. If you choose to live with people who you kind of going to get on with. So I do think about, I think about that. But I think there are different ways to the way we do it. And I would hope that, I mean, it'll be great. I mean, I'm not talking about an old people's home. I'm talking about a place you can have raves if you want.
That is
what I'm talking about.
Yes.
And parties and, you know, because we all.
It's agency. It's having, it's the choosing.
When we talk, when we have this conversation, we go, we do need a really big kitchen.
We do need a really big sound system.
Yeah. We do need, because we're going to have parties, you know. And or kitchen discos, you know, where you just dance in the kitchen, whatever. But I mean, what I'm talking about is that I'm not fundamentally going to change.
I think it's so funny, isn't it, that people just assume that you're going to be a different person. But that's the other thing. It's like, I still feel like I'm 19.
Of course you do. I think I'm younger. I think I'm 14.
I keep waiting for, like, because it's like things that you tick off, isn't it? Like, to make you officially labeled like an adult, a lawnmower or like a mortgage. And these things, like, okay, I have children. I must be an adult. But I still feel like, when does it,
it doesn't happen. Clearly, you just still you.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think everyone's got those things. I, because for years, you know, I lived in squats and council flats, and I got somewhere and I thought, I know I'm going to get a wardrobe. Yeah, wardrobe was the most grown-up thing I could imagine having. Yeah. And then it was a fridge freezer. I don't know. Although you get these things. And I remember being in my sort of early 40s and I was at a party and I started talking to someone about their kitchen tiles. And I remember looking at my... thinking, no. What? I'm sorry. What? When did you start talking about kitchen tiles? When did this become... significant? What is wrong with you? Of course, you know, I like having somewhere nice to live, but now am I actually standing there talking about kitchen tiles?
Yeah.
Am I going to dinner where people are talking about doing their own conveyance of a mortgage? You know, it's like, kill me now.
I like that you say that in your article. You're like, that one of the things you learn is that going out, sometimes you don't want to go and sit in a bar because you think you should, or you don't want to go to a boring party and talk about schools and houses because you think that's norm. You're just like, no, this isn't what
I think, yeah, because I think I said it's like, to me, it's a process of editing. And I think you get, I think you're allowed to be a little bit, I had a couple of weeks where, because I'd read Meryl Streep had done it, you know, we love Meryl Streep. Mm. So I'd read that she had, because she's so kind of amazing and powerful, that she doesn't say to people, she's not directly rude to people, but she says, so a photographer wants her to pose in a certain way and she says, no, that won't be happening. Yeah. And I thought, oh, that's a good thing. I'm just going to say that to people. Yeah. So I spent about 2 weeks where people say, oh, do you want to come to this show? And I go, no, that won't be happening. And they just looked at me like, oh, God, she's even more like gone mad than we thought she was. Because it didn't work because I'm not Meryl Streep. Because you can see that Meryl Streep's really regal. And she says, no, that won't be happening. She's Meryl Streep. Whereas me, I would just say to random people, no, that won't be happening. And they were like... what does she think she's doing? But what I got from what she was saying was she no longer had to make excuses.
Yeah.
She no longer had to make excuses.
And apologise.
And
well
say,
for saying,
no, that's, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Because
I don't want to.
Because I don't want to.
Simple.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't want to. If someone has, as I said, asked you to go for lunch for 20 years and you haven't been, it's because you don't want to go. But you say, oh, yeah, okay, I'll put it in the diary. Yeah, we must.
Yeah.
Like, no, I'm not going to do it. And the other flip side of that, which also sounds arrogant, but I don't care, is when someone gives you a compliment, we ask, as women, we always go, oh, this old thing, or oh, I wrote that thing, and they say, yeah, that was really great. And I go, yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Whereas before you say, oh, it wasn't. I did it really quickly. Yeah. Now I'm just, I think, yeah. Okay, yeah. I'm going to take that compliment. Yeah. Thank you very much. You know, when you're a teenager, you do stupid things because you don't know how they're going to work out, but you front it out because you're, you know, 15 or whatever. I think there's a bit of that about being older. I like that.
Yeah.
Yes, if I want to go and do that. I mean, I mean, my poor kids, I mean, I said to them the other day, I'm going to Amsterdam. I'm going to go and take some psychedelic truffles. And it's all official.
And they're like, Mom.
I'm like, oh, no, you're not going to write about it, are you? You're not going to write about it. I'm like, yeah, that's why I'm doing it. I mean, it's a sort of retreat in Amsterdam. Yeah. And I said, I'd do it for somebody. And it's like, oh, God. What are you going to say? Don't know, because I haven't done it yet.
I always say with my friends, it's always a common thing. We're like, when we're 80, we're just going to take loads of ease.
Drink
vodka all day.
Of course. Again, our culture is ridiculous about that. When, you know, most people who die in a hospice or in hospitals are on diamorphine, which is, you know, which is heroin. Yeah. And so we're completely ridiculous about all of this stuff. I went to see a friend of mine this week in hospital and she's very, very, very ill. She's, you know, terminally ill and she was having a glass of wine and the nurse came and said, I think that's bad for your blood sugar. And you just think, really? Really? Wow. At this stage of the game? No, we don't. You must have the freedom. I think you're just not going to fundamentally sort of be a different person if you enjoyed taking drugs when you're younger, you might enjoy taking them when you're older. Yeah. If you didn't, you're not suddenly going to do it. I think it's just like being who you are and kind of knowing yourself a bit.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, that's all right. I mean, I don't want to just be this huge embarrassment to my children. I am aware of that. But, you know, I
wrote. You're aware of it.
I'm aware of it. But then, you know, because obviously they've grown up with me. Sometimes, because I'm supposed to be writing a memoir, they just say, will you just get on with it? We know everything anyway. It's all like, you know, it's all awful. So, yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of your friend, the terminally ill one, mm-hmm. with the idea of being closer to the end of your life, how is that something you think of more? Is that something you think of less? How does that? Because I still feel like it's ridiculously taboo, the idea of death and dying when it's the one inevitable thing that's going to happen to all of us. It's like...
Oh, I completely agree. And I think about it a lot. And if you say that even, it sounds like you're automatically kind of sort of weirdly morbid. I think we should think about it. One of the things I did a couple of years ago was I went back to college and I was studying a lot of existentialism to become a therapist. And it was so interesting because obviously that's the whole point of it. As you say, it's the only fact of life we know. We come into the world and the one thing we know is we're going to die. That's the only thing we know. Mm. And yet we can't talk about it at all. People are even scared of making wills, for instance, which is ridiculous. If you've got kids, you should make a will. Mm. And if you say to anyone, you know, you need to make a will, people go, oh, don't say that. Don't say that. And then you get financial advisors and bank managers who say things to you like, well, if that thing should happen, perhaps you need to make some arrangements. And I would say, what thing?
Yeah. You can't say the word.
To make them say it, because I am aware. You know, I don't actually think I'm immortal, you know. Yeah. And I always like that thing that I think you have to behave as though you're going to live forever, knowing that you're not. I think these two things are, you know, you keep both of them, you hold on to both of them. I remember when Derek Jarman, who I loved, he was... you know, he had his fantastic garden at Dungeness and he was dying, you know, he had HIV and he was dying and he was planting stuff. And somebody said to him in an interview, what's it like planting things knowing that you might not be here to see them? Because he was very ill. And he said, everybody who plants something, nobody knows whether they're going to be there to see it, but you should do it anyway. And I thought that was kind of a brilliant like way to think about living, you know, and then none of us know, but we could still do the planting. Yeah. Having said that, you can see I've got AstroTurf in the garden.
Oh, I love it. That's awesome.
Yeah, it looks great. It looks like real grass to me.
In 10 years, according to what you said about the normal time that a woman gets menopause, I will be getting menopause, right? And I am terribly ignorant about it. I feel really bad because I don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
About what it does. You kind of alluded to things. What happens? Please, Suzanne, help for all those listening who've dreaded it and don't understand it.
Okay.
What can you... It's
so funny you asking me because I was known in Greece last week. I was with a load of women who were in their early 40s who I would say incredibly smart and didn't know anything and were saying to me, to each other, oh, I feel like this and I feel like that. And all the things I was saying, I was thinking, oh, yeah, you're just going into the menopause. And I sort of had, I'm not a doctor. Okay.
Here we go.
Everybody thinks the menopause is just your period. You have periods and they stop.
Yeah.
It's not like that. It's a long process. And some women sail through it, honestly. Some women have mood swings, feel depressed, feel irritable, the hot flushes, all of that stuff. Insomnia is part of it. Feel a bit of brain fog even. All sorts of things, aches and pains. But that's called perimenopause. So you go to a doctor and they say, they'll test your hormones and they'll say, you know, you're not actually menopausal yet, you're perimenopausal. And I say then, What does that mean? And they said, oh, that can go on for 10 years.
10? 10 years?
Yeah, I know, this is what I said.
I thought you were going to say maybe 2.
No, it could go on for years because you're still having the odd period, right? So you could still, and you still get pregnant.
So your periods lessen? I know it's different to every person, but they stop being every month, so they may be every, what, like 4 months?
Yeah, you might not have one for 3 months, okay. And then you have one, and then, or you go through a period. You go through a patch where you think, oh, it's done now. I'm not having any more periods. And then you have one. Or you have a bit of bleeding. So you're still having, your hormones are still going up and down. And what's really happening in your body is your estrogen levels are dropping. And that's what causes, a lot of the problems. Like your skin will get drier. Sometimes your hair will fall out. You feel itchy because it's estrogen that sort of provides the kind of bloom of youth. And at that point, you know, you make a decision or not around HRT, which didn't work for me. It works. I'm not for or against anything. I just think people need to know what's happening to make an informed choice about it. I've got friends who were majorly depressed, upset, felt terrible, felt they certainly couldn't survive in a busy workplace, get an HRT patch, and they're just back to themselves.
And what exactly does HRT do?
Well, it's putting in some more estrogen as a combination of estrogen and progesterone. But there's a risk. There's risks with all medications. So they're still discussing it because there was a scare about HRT being linked to a rise in breast cancer because breast cancers are also to do with estrogen. Then they have another study where it says it isn't. And then another reason that you might take HRT is if, as you get older, your bones thin. So I hope that by the time it happens to you, that people are talking about it. And so that when you walk into your GP, I would like to use a medical term, but my friend used to just describe me as sweaty and mental. When you walk
in, I'm sweaty and I'm mental.
When you go into your GP, sweaty and mental, that they don't just say to you, oh, have an antidepressant or have this, that you know that you have worked out what you might want to try and what you might not want to try. You know? And the only thing I can say about it is light at the end of the tunnel, because once you've gone through that phase and you no longer have periods, my God, that's great.
So the perimenopausal bit is the bit when your periods are stopping.
Stopping.
And then the actual menopause
is... I remember saying, because I said to my doctor, because she said, so she was explaining this to me, and I haven't explained it very well because I'm not a doctor, and I hope some doctors will come and talk to you about it.
Yeah. I think I'll do a whole episode on menopause.
Yeah. Because we don't know enough. Yeah. People generally don't know enough. But when I said to my doctor, 10 years, just like you did, and she said, well, you know, it's different for different people. And I said, well, when will it stop? You know, when... Yeah.
Especially if you've got insomnia, that's hard.
Yeah, and he says, when will it stop? And I don't know what the medical definition is. I think your periods need to have stopped for a year, 2 years, and then they say that you're post. Because I say, when can I say I'm done kind of thing? And she was so, she was lovely, my doctor. And she said, what is it that you really want, Suzanne? And I said, and I didn't know, and I said, a certificate! Because I couldn't think of anything to say, but I wanted
because it's an achievement getting through it.
I want something so I can just put it on the, so I can show, like, so I don't know what I wanted. I wanted some acknowledgement of it. And I did think, and I, when I wrote about it, I have to say a piece, I said, I kind of felt, you know, maybe I'm a bit of a pagan, but I kind of wanted a ritual, you know. I'm done. I'm sort of out of that bit of my life. I can no longer reproduce, which is a massive boon to most people, I should imagine. But, yeah,
it's funny. I when I read the article about menopause, it reminded me of when I tried to give up smoking, and the overall kind of idea of people who smoke loads is that giving up smoking is a sacrifice. But Alan Carr, who wrote this really famous book, his way of saying is that you need to look at smoking like you're free of it, like you're free of nicotine. You've been liberated from nicotine. And it's similar with the menopause. It's like, if you look at it like you're free of periods, you're free of this fucking monthly menstruative pain and annoyance, and you know, you're not that,
I know, it's really weird,
that kind of human making machine anymore.
Yeah, you're just not that
a human.
And then you think, and then, you know, if you're that sort of person who thinks about stuff, then you think, so what's the meaning then? So I've done that bit, that bit's gone, I'm going to this other bit. I mean, I remember saying to my when my daughter, she said, have you got any tampons? And I said, well, no, I haven't. And she said, Mom, why not? Like, where are they in the house? I go, oh, I haven't actually I haven't got them. And then, of course, I've got them because they live with me. But it was, what do you mean? I said, because they've always been there. I live in a house of women. I've got three daughters. It's like that. It's like tights, you know, we all take each other's tights. And what do you mean I haven't got any? Because I don't have to have them anymore. And
On the wall.
That's what. But I don't know a woman who misses their period.
Oh my God.
I think they miss being younger and they miss all of that. I'm not sort of saying it's all lovely, but I have never met a woman who misses it.
Suzanne, thank you so much. That was incredible.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it.
Oh, this is going on.
And I think people are going to love that so much and be very comforted by so many things that you said. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. It's lovely to see you.
There you go. A wonderful, enlightening and hopefully helpful conversation with Suzanne Moore with regards to all things growing old. If you have anything to say about what you just heard, if you are moved to contact me and tell me stories or tell me how that affected you, go for it. findingannymack@gmail.com is the email address, or hit us up on Instagram, AnnieMacDJ, and leave a comment on one of the podcast posts on there. Next week, folks, we have another female guest, and she's quite similar to Suzanne Moore in a way, in that she's completely unfiltered, but she's in politics. So that's a lot kind of bigger deal when you have someone as unfiltered and as authentic as this woman. Her name is Jess Phillips. She kind of shines like a beacon of sense and humanity from the kind of pompous idiocy that comes out of Westminster so often. She is viral a lot of the times because of her very human kind of rants in Westminster. She's an MP for Birmingham Yardley since 2015, and she's a member of the Labour Party, and she is a wonderful, wonderful woman. So I'm really excited to have her on. I'll see you then. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.